It's June 29th, 2012. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello, welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery, what are we telling them today?
Two flat tires later.
What? Two flat tires later.
Yeah. I had a bit of a morning.
Okay. This happened this morning?
No.
Okay. All right.
This was what day is this?
Today is Friday.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm pretty sure today's Friday.
All right. I don't even remember what day it was then. It may have been last Friday.
Okay.
I don't even know.
Okay.
Baby's killing me, man.
That'll happen.
So, yeah, I had a really bad morning. It's been really hot here. So, it's been very, very hot, like over 100 degrees hot, and which is really hot for me because I'm a sweater.
Uh-huh.
Are you a sweaty guy?
No, I'm a jacket.
Okay, so I'm on my way to work on my scoot. So have I ever told you about my scooter?
Yeah, your like Vespa-like thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was coming around a corner, and I was heading up the hill on like the last stretch on my way to my office, and I noticed that I was wobbling. And I haven't even like, you know, had my morning glass of scotch yet. So It wasn't, you know, it was something actually happening. So I pulled over and I took a look, and sure enough, the rear tire is almost completely flat. Huh. And it just like happened very quickly. Like, I don't think I hit anything.
There was no sudden event that.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Yeah.
So, the nice thing about, this type of scooter, so it's a Stella, which is, sold by the Genuine Scooter Company in Chicago, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they buy, when Vespa moved their manufacturing to India a long time ago, there's the factories in India that still make like the old school metal bodied 150cc 1979 Vespa P.
Mm.
They keep making them. But they're somewhat more up to date. They have like electronic starters and, somewhat better electrical systems, though not really that's a whole other topic for another day. But the great thing about it is that since it is built on this old platform, you have a spare tire.
Huh.
Is that not awesome?
That's pretty good for a scooter. Yeah.
Very good for a scooter.
Yeah.
Changed my tire on the way to work in the sun on the side of a road.
This sounds pleasant. Yeah.
Yeah. I had the boys in blue stop by to check in on me.
Oh, okay.
To stand around and supervise while I change my tire.
They're good at that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at least they didn't tell me I was driving the wrong way down the street,
right.
And that I couldn't do that this time.
You can't do that. You can't do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm aware.
Yeah.
I'm still mad about that. Yeah, I know. I know I can't drive the wrong way down the street. That's why I turned around. So there I am on the side of the road changing a tire. Get the new tire on, finish my commute, and pretty much like, you know, shower in the bathroom with paper towels. Yep. When I get there, because like I said before, I'm a bit sweaty.
That's strategy.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. And then the worst part was that on the way home, it happened again with the spare tire.
I mean, this sounds like, this sounds like you've got something. Something's wrong with the vehicle itself.
Something's wrong with the wheel.
No?
I think the wheel is like cutting into my tires.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I haven't even had a chance to like, you know, take it apart again and take a closer look, because I have to order new tires.
Yeah.
So I haven't done that yet. But that last, I want to say, I couldn't even like, I had to push home like about half a mile
in the heat.
In the heat, in the afternoon, in the sun.
Yeah, but at least you had a shower waiting for you. You had a real shower.
Oh, I didn't want to be anywhere near any like warm water or anything.
Okay.
Like I was exhausted.
This is the garden hose.
Oh, God. Yeah, that would have been fantastic. I actually had my loving wife brought me like ice packs that I like put under my neck, and I just lay on the floor and just moaned and groaned and complained, which is usually what I do when I come home from work. So that was not the different part. The different part was that I was overheated. Yeah. So there was a that was a remarkably unpleasant day, and I'm grateful to be alive.
Wow. All right. Well, two flat tires later, and you're still here.
Yeah, it was quite an ordeal, but I made it.
Speaking of ordeals,
did you see that Captain Kirk took us to the moon?
I mean, the weird thing is this is totally in character for William Shatner. Like this is.
Yeah,
I love this headline: Shatner drops pants at L.A. airport.
Yeah, so apparently he's on a trip, and like a lot of people who have had to be frisked and felt up by TSA, he has opted for the shall we say relaxed fit.
Yeah,
because you know they take belts, they take shoes, they take everything, and yeah, apparently while he was going through a checkpoint, his pants fell down.
Yeah,
and a bunch of people, you know, got an eyeful of Shatner.
Yeah, that's
this guy has the worst luck, like, in general. Did you know, like, two of his wives have drowned in swimming pools?
I have not been aware of the personal life of William Shatner. I've only been aware of the illustrious film and television career.
Well, you're a big fan of like T.J. Hooker, right? That's your favorite show.
I appreciate that the characters that he is playing now, or at least, you know, like the character he played on Boston Legal seemed to be, at least from what I knew, from what I could tell, seemed to be him. So.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So,
Priceline commercials. I'm pretty sure that's not acting.
Yeah. Yeah. So the fact that he's dropping his pants in an airport, you know, that's, yeah, sure.
It's pretty much par for the course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if he buys a new house, though, he should skip the pool.
Probably. Yeah. That'd be not a good move. Okay.
We're going to talk about the Google thing later.
We talk a lot about Google this show.
But I did check out at the Google I/O conference. They made some announcements on software, and I'm checking out Google Chrome for iOS on the iPhone in particular. I like it a lot.
I bet it syncs your bookmarks, doesn't it?
Yeah, Google. It does.
Oh my God, I'm downloading it right now.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, I really should.
And that's pretty cool. But it's also got a pretty nice UI. I mean, obviously, it's using Apple's WebKit, so it doesn't have like its own engine, so it's not using the new the browsers do, and I've bought, like, I mean, what do I have? I purchased the iCab mobile,
okay,
which is a web browser. It's pretty good.
Atomic Web was
yes
it?
I've purchased that.
Opera Mini,
no, screw that.
Okay.
What else?
Actually, does Opera Mini use WebKit? Do they?
It has to on iOS.
I guess it has to. Yeah. Well, I mean,
I think on the desktop it's using the Firefox, the Mozilla engine, maybe. I don't even know.
Yeah,
maybe it's using WebKit. I mean, I think everyone's using WebKit.
I mean,
now.
But Chrome except Firefox. is you know, Chromium is a fork off of WebKit anyway, right?
Yeah, in a manner of speaking. I mean, they're the same code base. But
yeah. But okay, but so I'm actually literally downloading this right now. But tell me more about.
Yeah, I like it a lot. There's a couple of things about the interface I like a lot. Its handling of tabs is pretty great. It also shows you your open tabs on all of your devices. If you use a Google account with Google Chrome, all of the computers and devices that you are using it with will show up, and that's pretty slick.
I'm constantly amazed when I move from my laptop to my desktop and see recently closed tabs that are, you know, the same ones, or, you know, or for whatever it is, from other devices, and it's got all the you know, all the recent tabs from my laptop right there. So
I mean, the bookmarking thing I kind of had under control, though, because I mean, I use Pinboard, and then there was also this new service that launched last week, or not last week, but I somewhat recently, and it's called Kipt. I think it's called Kipt. It's okay. KIPPT, and it's kind of like a Delicious / Pinboard service, but it has some collaborative features that are a little bit interesting. If you have like an aversion to Pinboard because you don't want to pay $9 or whatever, this is definitely worth checking out, because I thought it was interesting. I haven't really played with it a whole lot, though. I don't know if you've even had a chance to look at it.
I've not seen it yet. No. But
it's pretty cool, though.
I'm just not as big on the bookmarking as you are. I mean, you go nuts with the, you know, with the pinboard stuff, and I have, well, like, four links.
Yeah, this is all, like, my anxiety about forgetting things, right? Like, I'm a pack rat. I'm a hoarder.
Right. But a digital hoarder, which is far superior, so...
Well,
or you're moving, your scan smack is helping you get there.
Yeah, there was, and that was a good scan snap week too. I had a, I found some, like,
another
was,
good yeah. scan snap week. Those are,
yes, yeah. yes, they're very common. I found some old ticket stubs. Like, I was cleaning out some other stuff in my desk because I've been still, like, you know, rearranging baby stuff and all that. And I found a ticket stub for a concert I went to in, like, 1997.
Huh.
It was a soul coughing show in Chicago, and I was with my girlfriend and my BFF, and we were, man, it was the Metro in Chicago, and I want to say we were there on the second night of the show, because there was two nights that they were playing. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But the cool thing about that particular show, though, is that, you know, the live music archive at archive.org?
No, I didn't know about that.
So archive.org has this music archive, so the taper friendly bands, so it's a lot of, like, you know, hippie jam bands, so if you like Fish and the Grateful Dead, like, it's the world's largest archive of that. But there's a lot of musicians that are fine, or that don't object to people recording their shows. Uh-huh. So there's, like, decades worth of DAT recordings that have been transcribed into lossless formats and then uploaded onto this site, and it's really cool because you'd be surprised, like, what shows up there. Like, I'm not. There's been a lot of things that have wound up on that site that I've really appreciated coming across, and, like, this show was one of the ones that happened to be on there for Soul Coughing. So it's kind of cool to, like, go back, and even, like, when Mike Doty did, he was the front guy for Soul Coughing, and now he does a lot of solo stuff. A lot of his shows also. It's like some of the shows that I went to when I lived in DC are on archive.org. It's really nice. I mean, if you are at all interested in music, it's worth looking around. I mean, cool. Even if you don't have, like, you don't have to have an agenda, there's plenty of stuff to browse. But yeah, I spent a lot of time there. But I thought it was pretty cool to find, like, an old ticket stub like that. And I was able to
that sort of stuff does make sense. But I think, you know, I mean, I think your strategy of, hey, just make that searchable, you know, put that in a digital databank and make it searchable, and then, you know, throw away the paper record. Yeah.
Yeah. And when I put those, like, when I scan things like that in and put them into, like, DevonThink, which is my little database I use, I like to tag things like that journal and then, like, the year. So cool. I can browse, like, that tag, and I can actually, like, all the stuff from, like, going back to 1977, like, just little bits and blobs of, like, my life that that I kind of collect and shove somewhere so I can look at them and recover them later. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Cool. Anyway, so let's see. What else has been going on? Some Windows 8 weirdness?
Well, I'm not sure what's going on. And, like, I think it's because I don't really boot into Windows very often. So I think that there's a lot of, like, maintenancey stuff that Windows is doing whenever you start it up again. But, like, I wanted to play Mass Effect the other day, and I started it up. Apparently when I installed Windows 8 again, it, like, really blew away a bunch of stuff. So, like, all of my Mass Effect 2 saves are gone.
Okay. Huh.
Because I don't really, you know, I don't pay attention to my Windows stuff.
That stuff may be in a weird place. I'm not sure.
It lives inside the Steam, because if I bought it, or I got it through Steam. Did you buy that for me, or did I buy that?
No, I think I don't know. I may have told you to get it during the sale. I think that's what happened.
That probably happened.
I think Steam keeps all that stuff in the program files.
It's something weird. I don't even remember. Yeah. But I was a little bit out of shape about that. But yeah, it's been, like, kind of chuggy and slow and strange, and I'm not really sure what to make of that. But I mean, I like it. I mean, I really do. I think Windows 8 is going to be pretty awesome for Microsoft. I mean, it has to be, right?
Yeah.
But I don't really have a lot of things negative to say about it. I mean, there's some of the cool things are, like, the in the Metro UI, there's a, like, mail widget. And you can have it. You can configure for an Exchange server. But what you can also do is you can aim it at the Google Apps Exchange service.
Uh huh.
So you have like this really nice real-time push capable calendaring and email showing up in the Metro Dash. Yeah, it's pretty slick.
Right, and it's for your, you know, non-exchange email. So,
well, I mean, it's because they're using
Because ActiveSync, Google works around it. Yeah.
But, well, they don't work around it. I mean, they've done an implementation of ActiveSync.
Okay, yeah.
That's how that service works. I mean, that's how you can set up like Exchange on your iPhone and have it show up Google app stuff. But yeah, I've been playing around with the Google stuff a little bit lately. I guess that's probably another
well,
day.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk about all the Google I.O. stuff later, but I just, for you personally, it seems like you've been into the Google services a little more than you would have been a month ago.
I really backpedaled because I didn't understand what was going on and I was really wary. And there's a lot of weird stuff that Google does and I'm still kind of creeped out by, but at the same time, like, I mean, this is a publicly traded company. They're not doing really sinister stuff, you know?
Right.
Like, I mean, I need to, even if I'm a little skeptical of Google and what they're doing, they're not Halliburton. You know, like I need to like stop pretending that they are living under my bed or something. But you know, there was a patent that Apple was awarded that was really weird. It's like this anti-surveillance patent. Did you read about this?
No. So I mean, this stuff
we have a link.
We talked about this on I think last show or the show before, but like anti-surveillance has been a much bigger thing as of late.
Yeah, so there's like some technology that, and I guess Novell is even using it in some product. Well, not completely, but certain aspects of this. But Apple has been awarded a patent on coming up with like these software agents to create clones of yourself.
Oh,
or of your like internet use profile, and then when you aren't using the internet, these agents and clones will become active and like kind of cloud the pool for you.
Oh, wow. Do random traffic?
Huh. Yeah. So the it's really hard to like to wrap your head around like what the objective is, but I think it's like a privacy measure where, you know, Microsoft and Google and Yahoo, like there's so many companies that are doing like these analytics and that are like data mining Apple's customers. And I think Apple's in a position where they're not able to benefit from that. So they have I don't know what their perception is of this. But
it seems like a weird move for them because, I mean, it's not necessarily something that is going to be that... Well, maybe. I don't know. It doesn't seem like something that you can tell a consumer, hey, you know... Well, I guess maybe it is. Of like, hey, you use this and then no one can track you.
Well, it's not necessarily no one can track either, but what it does do is make it very difficult to track because you're kind of like throwing what's that stuff of like when fighter jets are like flying around and
chaff
missile. Yeah, it's like chaff.
Yeah.
So you have like these false flags being thrown all over the place, and it, you know, obviously, like it's not gonna prevent you from being tracked by government or state actors, right?
Yeah.
But software algorithms, it definitely would probably make their profile of you less reliable.
I wonder if this becomes kind of like the modern day security battle of you've got the, you know, sort of privacy algorithms that get smarter and smarter, and then you've got the anti-privacy algorithms that get smarter and smarter. And so it's the battle of trying to confuse, you know, the advertiser's algorithm versus the advertiser's algorithm trying to negate that confusion. You know, that would be a really fascinating battle for a computer science algorithms expert to dig into. Yeah.
I haven't, like, you know, I read through like the description on Patently Apple and I looked over some of the diagrams and was reading summaries, but it's definitely outside my realm of expertise. But I thought it was really a clever take on things because you could kind of build these little profiles of yourself and then set them to work for you, you know?
It totally sounds like the future. I mean, that...
yeah.
It's,
yeah. Yeah, and it's like, you know, they're... It's a pretty clever approach, and I don't know that... I mean, one of the problems that I saw with this immediately off the bat was that as service providers are moving into, like, these metered models, I don't want to pay for my clones to be like, you know, going to Drudge Report.
Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah. It's you know.
Anyway. Oh,
did I tell you about this bag? I haven't bought it. I should start off with that. But there's a new bag for Mission Workshop.
You sound incredibly excited about this. So
it's really cool. It's the I have one of their backpacks now, and I love it. I use it just about every day. But they have this latch and
this thing
called
is massive.
Well, they have a smaller one.
Okay,
they have a really big one, and then they have a smaller one that's like about the same size as the one I already have. But it has this interesting setup where you can attach other compartments to it. So like you have like this messenger-esque backpack, like a field pack, uh-huh. And then there's like a laptop carrier that attaches to the outside of that bag.
Oh, weird. It's
and
like
then you
a
have
modular
like
bag.
Yeah. So however, you know, whatever you're carrying on a particular day, you just like attach the stuff that you want and head out the door.
Wow.
And then they also have one of the accessories that they sell is a shoulder strap that you can put like the outer bags on. So if you just want to carry the laptop sleeve.
Huh. Wow.
And that's pretty cool. And it's just like I picked up that the Mazzetto, the Waterfield Mazzetto.
Yeah. I like the Mazzetto.
I have one problem with it though.
Okay.
My new camera.
Does not fit?
It's I can't carry the camera and my laptop.
Oh yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's just a little too because the lens
it's
is a
thin.
Little
thin. The Mazzettos are pretty thin. Yeah. Yeah. I mean
like laptops then. I mean, you know, you've got you have a new MacBook now.
Yes, I'm that's like first on my list. I you want to talk about the ScanSnap thing real quick or is this
I already did.
Oh, that was that. Okay. All right, we're good. Yeah, so I should let me tell you about my new
You
MacBook
sound
Air.
Super pumped.
Oh, man.
You were like sending me love messages.
Yeah, well, so because we were talking about when we were going to do the show, and you're like, oh, I can't do it until Friday. I'm like, oh man, I can't wait because I need to talk about this MacBook Air.
You are using it right now, aren't you?
I am recording the show on this computer, and the weirdest thing. So, what I thought was, I'll get this computer, and I've got my former computer is, or you know, my laptop, my standard laptop is a 15-inch MacBook Pro. From the previous, I think, mid-2010. And I thought I'll get this MacBook Air. It'll be my sort of mobility laptop. But if I'm really doing anything serious, then I'll go back and I'll use my 15-inch with the big screen, with the you know, better graphics card, with all this stuff. That has not happened.
No, I didn't think it would.
Yeah. I am 100% all of my work, everything is happening on this MacBook Air now.
Yeah, you're all in.
It's amazing. And I thought the 13-inch screen would be too small to do, you know, to do like side-by-side document editing or that sort of stuff. It works just fine. Yeah.
Please. Yeah.
It's high resolution enough. It is so much faster. I mean, it's giving me the feeling of like every time I get a new laptop, and I didn't think it would happen this time, but every time I get a new laptop, you know, I'll go back and I'll need to like transfer some files off of the previous laptop or like, you know, find some application settings or something. And I'll go back to the previous laptop and everything will be so incredibly slow, just like opening Finder windows and, you know, switching applications and all that stuff will be so slow that it's just like, how did I ever work on this thing? Mm-hmm. And I thought that wasn't going to be the case this time because, you know, my former
because
laptop.
You're a fool.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because the 15-inch laptop, like that's a pretty awesome machine. That thing is still quite good as far as specs go. It's got an i7.
You never put the SSD in there.
It does not have an SSD. Yeah.
That makes all the difference.
It's amazing. I mean, Photoshop launches in seconds, this thing reboots in seconds, the web browser.
Forget about it.
Launching those
things.
Yeah. Yeah, like launching an application, it just doesn't, I mean, it's just there. Yeah.
Have you done the when you first opened it up? Did you do the internet restore thing, or did you just leave it from the factory?
No. Whenever if I get a new computer, I do not restore settings or anything from my previous.
No. So. I mean, like, do you do like a completely clean install? Because those are our series of MacBook Air. I have the previous gen, and then you've got the newer. They have that new installation feature where you can actually even without. Like without an operating system on it, you can just hold down. What is it?
I can't remember. Option. Which it is. Option.
Yeah, and then you restart. You can do a fresh install of the operating system remotely from an Apple data center.
Yep.
You don't have to have installation media.
That is insane. I mean, really it makes sense because there's no disks and there's no disk drive in this thing. And I mean, I guess you could put an OS on a flash drive, but
yeah, I mean that works too.
So I did not do a clean install. I mean, the OS X is actually not taking up that much space at this point. It's pretty tiny, even with whatever the additional languages, whatever else you would click off if you were doing a clean install. I think they're downloading printer drivers on demand now too, because I noticed I tried to add a printer and it's like, hey, let's download the driver for this now. So that stuff is great. Yeah, I have not run into a storage space problem either on this thing. I've still got 160 gigabytes available, and that is with like several games installed and all my documents and all that stuff on here. So a couple other things. Remote disk was awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I ended up installing iWork using a remote disk, and I had both my previous laptop and this one on the same wireless network. I put the disk into that laptop. I had to enable remote disk sharing in preferences on that laptop, and it just it popped right up. You ping that laptop and ask for permission. And then the disk is there just as if it's plugged into the MacBook Air. It was seamless. The installation worked fine. I was pretty blown away, actually. So,
yeah, that's worked really well. I mean, that feature has been around for quite some time.
Yeah. I mean, that was a necessity as soon as they started going to the diskless laptop, form factor. So, and then here's the crazy thing. Here's the thing you didn't believe.
I was skeptical.
This thing plays games. I am such a believer in the new Intel integrated graphics chip, the HD 4000. I think it's got 512 megabytes of shared VRAM. It works. Like, it's
what games have you played?
So mostly
it?
Blizzard games, because those are the ones, because I haven't installed Windows on this thing and I don't plan to. But the Blizzard games, I've run StarCraft and it runs just as well as it did on my old laptop. I have run Diablo and it's a little slow. Diablo's a little slow, but I have not even tried Diablo on my old laptop. I've just run that on my desktop.
I think that it would probably run better on your old one.
I think so. I mean, that thing has an actual graphics card in it and it's, got 512 megabytes of dedicated VRAM. So, I think the graphics performance on this thing is probably not quite up to par. Well, definitely not up to par with my previous laptop, but the SSD makes up for it in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
World of Warcraft, I mean, I don't know, 30, 40 frames per second in crowded areas.
I wouldn't count on it in groups.
I didn't go on a raid. Yeah. So I don't.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, even with mine, I've done it before. Just to like log in and auction house and stuff, and it was okay for that, but I definitely wouldn't play on it. But also I wouldn't play on it because I can't stand playing that game with a touch.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, I played StarCraft on this. I'm playing this season's ladder matches, and I've won 3 out of 5 of them so far. And I've played real games.
Well, I'm
so.
Alan. I win matches.
I know, because I'm so good at StarCraft. but I'm just saying, like, it did not, it was, there was no noticeable speed difference, and I was running it at comparable settings as I was on my previous laptop. So
that's pretty cool.
I was pretty impressed with that. Yeah, definitely. Anyway, and then to manage all this stuff, I did a couple things, including subscribing to the Dropbox 50 gigabytes plan, because I, now I've got potentially 2 laptops that I'm juggling, and I just wanted all my stuff to be synced up. And 2 gigabytes is just not enough to store all of my documents. So now I'm only using like 10 of the 50, but I'm actually happy to give Dropbox money because they've provided a really solid service for me for several years. So figure it's time to get some cash their way anyway.
And they hardly ever let people just log in and look at your files without a password. That's only happened like twice.
Yeah. Their iPhone app is slick.
That's true.
Works really well. I love that it doesn't use much processing power at all.
No. That's a. I mean, the technology is fantastic, and they're I mean, we talked about it before.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if they let you use your own encryption key. On your data, but yeah,
I really don't know what their aversion to that is. Like that's really, it kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, maybe
what possible reason would they? I mean, well, I know why. It's because they can't do dedupe.
They can't do what?
They wouldn't be able to do the deduplication of data.
Yeah,
you had a private encryption key for everybody.
Right. Right.
Because then, because right now, if like, you know, you and I both have the OS 10, 10.7.4 combo update .dmg, right?
Yeah.
Dropbox.
They're not storing that twice. Yeah.
No. They store it once and then they keep a pointer to it. So I'm pretty sure that it's a business decision on their part. But it would be nice if, like, I mean, if you've got a paid account, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I actually hesitated for a while because it's not cheap. I mean, you know, it's not expensive, but I think it's like, you know, $100 a year, which is, I guess, a little more than I was expecting, but still, that is within the range of what I'm willing to pay. So,
oh, sure. And I mean, especially the convenience and the fact that it's so darn fast, and like you've that LAN synchronization thing, especially when you've got your computers in the house. Like, yeah, I mean,
man, that saved me. Did we talk about that on the last show, or did you see?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I had both of my laptops right next to each other on the home network, and they were, those files were flying. it was super fast.
Definitely pretty awesome. Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, so I used that to get all my files in sync, and then I also put my music collection on Google Music. Well, I mean, 20,000 songs.
Come on,
free.
Man.
So
why didn't you use like a Match?
iTunes Match. Because I don't know, 20,000 songs for free, you know, in a web
iTunes
browser
matches.
Anywhere.
Oh, please.
I don't want M4A files anymore.
They're ever. Not M.
when you buy music on iTunes, it still is.
You can buy MP3s.
Uh huh.
Anyway. You can.
Well, yeah,
they sell MP3s.
When you download them, are they MP3s?
You can. There's several. There's many albums where they do that.
Many albums. Okay.
Yeah. Plus, come on, man.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, 20,000 songs is way more than I will use.
How many do you have in your library?
About 5,000.
See, you're lightweight.
Yeah, and but it's 5,000, but it's like, you know, 15 gigabytes, which is more than, you know, about three times as much as a lot of the services out there would store. So
does all that like show up in iTunes?
What do you mean?
Like if you wanted to sync, you know, your music to an iPod or your iPhone.
Oh no. So
how do you get them from?
So
this sounds like a really good idea. That you've got all of your stuff in Google and you can't put it on your phone.
Yes. Yeah. Well, no. So, I mean, it's still in iTunes on my main laptop, but the idea is that if I want it, on my Air, then I go to music.google.com and I can play it there. So it's
as long as you have a Flash player.
Yeah, it does require a Flash player, which is really unfortunate. Yeah. It's less I'm now curating my entire music library in Google Music, and it's more Google Music is like my Dropbox for music. So
I can dig it. I mean, I am giving you a hard time and I'm busting your balls. like the iTunes Match, I like a lot. And the reason that I like it a lot is because it's very convenient for me because I like iTunes. I mean, it's not great. iTunes is doing way too much these days.
Yeah.
But they admitted that
ping was a mistake.
Well, that's going away.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to drop
ping. But you mean the books, the
yeah. And the, apps, oh, the, yeah. Dude.
Yeah.
Managing books in iTunes is a horrific experience. I can't tell you. I've opened no fewer than half a dozen enhancement requests on that, but I'm pretty sure that like the entire app is getting chucked. There was an article that just came out today about that. Even they said that the next version of iTunes is like going to be out by the end of 2012, and that it's probably going to be like completely new
and music focused.
I don't know about that. Is it
really? Oh, huh. Okay.
Well, I didn't.
I mean,
see that,
on the phone, I know they're in iOS 6. I guess they've forked out podcasts. That's no longer part of the music app.
Oh no.
So I could see them kind of going to a, there's an app for this, there's an app for that, there's, you know, rather than having everything in this one container. So
well, maybe what they'll do is, like, I think they'll probably end up like moving books and stuff like that into iCloud.
Yeah. And you're just not even managing it locally at all on your on your desktop or your laptop.
Because I mean that's the cool thing about iTunes Match though, is that when you're in iTunes now, if you have iTunes Match on my MacBook Air, I can just tick off like, you know, a dozen albums or whatever, and then I have those on my MacBook Air, and I don't have to like, because that was like,
I don't even want to worry. I don't even want to store anything locally on the air. I just want to be able to go in a web browser and play it from there, or go into Spotify and play it in there. So
yeah, there are a lot of people though that work offline a lot.
Yeah,
and I think that in those situations, like, that just doesn't help them.
Yeah.
But it's also possible that, like, most of the time, if I'm listening to music and I'm not like in my home office or in the living room, I'm going to be listening to it on my phone and headphones anyways. So yeah. I usually don't, that's why I don't even bother most of the time setting up iTunes libraries like that.
Yeah. And Spotify has a nice offline mode. So that works. I don't know that Google Music does. So, or you can actually download your stuff from it, but that's a pain. So anyway, yeah. So that's the MacBook Air stuff. I am pretty much completely migrated. So this is now my primary laptop, and I'm
good
happy
for you
about that.
That's awesome.
Now, if only I could get some internet.
Well, are you using your neighbor's connection now?
No, so I'm still in San Diego at the moment, but I'm heading up to the Bay Area tomorrow, and I'm going to be living in an apartment that currently has no internet. But that is because I am
like an
trusting
animal.
Yeah, like a caveman. Really, I mean that's that's uncivilized life right there. So I'm trusting in Sonic.net, who is a company that we've definitely talked about.
Yes, we have
on the show. They've been pretty active in a lot of stuff around defending users' privacy.
They've been going to bat for their customers.
Yeah, which is super cool. And they were really active around the SOPA and PIPA stuff. They've definitely been the good guys among the internet service providers out there. So I was super psyched to learn that I was moving into an apartment that was within their coverage area, because it meant
way
that
to go.
I could, yeah, because it meant that I could sign up for their service. So ideally, within the next week or so, me and my roommates should have Sonic.net's DSL service. So I'll have more to report then. But so far it's been, I mean, get this, I talked to them on the phone, and they assumed I knew what a static IP address was. I mean, like,
wow.
I know. Can you imagine an ISP that's just like, and you know, I'm guessing you're probably going to want the static IP there, right? And I'm like, yep. Sure.
Yeah, how many do they have available? Hey, do they do IPv6?
I remember reading something about it. I didn't look too far into it though. I'm not sure what their plan is for that, but they've been great. I think, you know, every phone call with them, most of them have been with the same representative actually. And, they're always just, you know, they're not talking down to you. They're, you know, you can tell they're competent, and you can tell they're, you know,
well, it's good. It's good customer service.
Yeah. Right. And you can tell that they don't just want to sell you things, you know?
Yeah. Would you like our package with
Would you like to add cable service to that? Would you like to bundle that with your
Would you like some antivirus software for $4.99 and a new internet homepage? We have a browser toolbar.
Oh, I spent so much time the other day cleaning off Roadrunner toolbars from my grandparents' computers. That was fun. Because he's like, well, they said they'd speed up my computer, so you know. And it was running slowly, so that seemed like a good move. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to getting some Sonic.net internet just as soon as AT&T gets their act together and actually hooks up the line. So,
yeah.
And then one last thing on my list of things is I'm now writing a blog, or I'm starting a blog using Jekyll.
Oh,
what?
Good for you.
Yeah, I know. I'm proud of myself.
I think you should be.
Jekyll is this, we've talked about it a little bit.
Yes, we have.
It's this static page generator. So you write all your stuff, typically actually in Markdown, and you just run Jekyll and it generates your blog.
You're just editing like little text files. Have you looked at Jekyll Bootstrap?
I did. I looked at that a little bit, and then I really wanted to do it from scratch myself because I wanted to sort of know what was happening in every little piece of the
equation.
That
and the kid that was running the Jekyll Bootstrap project, he kind of like, I mean, I don't know if he's like abandoned it, but he started like his own competitor to Jekyll.
Wait, is that Hyde?
No.
Okay. I mean, there is one out there called Hyde, actually, but
I can't remember what it's called. I'm finding it. But okay. he's making an even more modular, like alternative to Jekyll.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. But so the,
or go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, all right. No.
It's his thing is called Ruoh.
Ruoh. Oh boy.
Yeah. Ruoh. The Universal Static Blogging Platform.
So let me tell you the things I love about Jekyll.
Yeah, please do. I love it.
So, first of all, you can write everything in these little Markdown files, and you know you can do version control on them with GitHub, or with any Git repository. You can edit them in any Markdown editor. Super awesome. The second thing is there is no overhead. It is generating static pages. Those pages are being rendered in the browser. There is nothing funny happening. It's as simple as it can be. And it's just beautiful. Like the site is so fast. It's awesome.
It's going to be fast. And it's also like not a lot of weird code dependencies and server-side plugins and opportunities for it to get monkeyed with.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And you can host the entire thing in Amazon S3 or on GitHub Pages or any static, you don't have to have anything special to publish the site.
Yep, and I'm hosting it on my Rackspace server, and that's been really, really solid. So I'm super happy with that. And then the other thing is, you define everything. So you have you have amazing control over how your blog is rendered. How you can actually write plugins that tamper with the way Jekyll generates pages. You can control every single little aspect of how your blog works, and comparing it to WordPress, I just feel so much more in control. And I feel like I know, like I was saying earlier, I feel like I know every step of the way exactly what's happening. And I know nothing, no black magic is going on, it's all exactly as I expect it to be. So,
and for someone that's been bitten before by strange shenanigans in WordPress.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, WordPress is... I had two of my WordPress blogs compromised. It's great to know that... it's great to know what's happening behind the scenes, basically.
Yeah. So. There's a couple, like the one great thing, like for sources of inspiration whenever I'm working on Jekyll stuff, that list of sites that use Jekyll on GitHub.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
Some of those are really cool. There's a couple people in particular that are doing some pretty slick stuff.
Okay,
but
nice.
I would love to have a way to do this. I don't know. I think there's a couple of sites that I found that were doing it, but it's kind of convoluted and just outside my comfort zone. But I like a lot of things about Tumblr. Mainly how they handle like post formats. Mm-hmm. I like that you can have like static. Status style posts, and I like that you can have link style posts where like the header is the like a message that links to another article or something. Like I like that kind of thing, but I haven't figured out a good way to implement that with Jekyll.
You could probably do it, but it would take some tension.
Definitely. But so I guess what I'm saying is I think this is something that you should figure out.
I see. All right, just get a spec document over to me, and I'll have it on your desk by, by next week. Yeah,
excellent.
Take
a 20 out of petty cash on your way. Can you talk about your blog? Do you want to like mention?
Well,
what
so
you're doing?
I'll say, yeah. I mean, this is mostly. I mean, maybe you'll be interested in the topic of this blog, but it's called overworldmap.com. It's a celebration of video game cartography. So it's combining my two interests of maps and video games. Yeah, so it's It's all about, you know, maps and video games from very classic, you know, I'm looking at, currently the article I'm writing is Final Fantasy Maps Through the Ages, of looking back at NES and SNES, Final Fantasy and comparing those to modern day. But all sorts of, you know, content I've got planned, but that's not so much the focus here. What I do want you to check out is, if you have a chance, just to get an idea of the awesomeness of Jekyll. If you go to overworldmap.com, you go to the Final Fantasy article, you'll notice there's these photo galleries, these screenshot galleries, which I made, you know, a whole generator for these galleries. I've made something to generate the HTML code, and the JavaScript that lets you switch between the images in the galleries. But yeah, you like this?
Yeah.
Clean, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, all that, you know, I just did that in HTML and JavaScript, but to generate one of those galleries, all I need to do is, in the middle of my markdown code, I insert a little template tag, a little liquid template tag for Jekyll, and I say assign gallery equals, and then I do a comma separated list of my image names, just the names of the files, because I have a globally defined media server URL. Just the names of the files, and then I can move my media server wherever I want, and all the image links will be perfect, because all I say is what the name of the file is.
Can I make one suggestion?
Yes.
You got to fix your style sheet.
Really? What's wrong?
Well, I want you to do something.
Okay.
Go to incumbent.org and slide the browser window really wide and then really narrow. And see what happens.
Okay.
You want to do something like that.
Maybe.
Because yours is really, if I have like my browser
full
screen.
Well, it's fixed width, yeah.
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 It's like right
in
the middle.
I like fixed width because you know what.
Except on fixed width.
You know how it's going to render.
Mine will render and be readable on an iPhone. Yours will not.
Mine is readable on iPhone, but yeah, no, I know what you're, yeah, I could tweak that. Yeah. I can look into it.
I think you should.
Okay. Anyway, let me finish this gallery thing though. So
I think you should. Yeah,
I say assign gallery equals comma separated list of file names. And then then the next line is just include gallery.html. And I write those two lines of code, which are, you know, pretty compact. And I put those in the middle of the text, in the middle of my markdown file, and it just generates the whole gallery with all the HTML and JavaScript and everything. It's beautiful. That took a while to get right, but Jekyll is flexible enough that I was able to get it to do all the things I want it to do with those galleries. So anyway, I'm super happy. You can check out the blog.
It's awesome.
You can check out the blog if you want, and I do recommend if you have the technical chops and you are starting a blog, you know, look at Jekyll and see if it's for you, because you know, WordPress is getting more and more complex, and you don't necessarily need that complexity. So, okay, we should talk about news items because we are running out of time. So we'll go through this one fairly quickly, but Microsoft released a tablet called the Microsoft Surface. If you don't already know, which I'm sure you do, there's a cheaper version, which is just called the Surface, that has an ARM processor.
Like this is like the BlackBerry Playbook, right?
Yeah, pretty much, right? it's actually, there's some cool stuff to this. So there's a sort of lightweight version that's kind of a tablet-like thing, and there's a more expensive version that's kind of a tablet/laptop hybrid that runs actual Windows 8, and it's called the Surface Pro. So these come with these, actually what I think is a pretty cool idea of integrating a keyboard into the cover. So they come with the touch cover, which is just a flat keyboard where the keys are marked out but don't have any depth to them. And then there's a type cover that is actually more of a tactile keyboard like you'd find on a Mac laptop. Then, you know, so you can attach these covers and have a, you know, prop the thing up and have a laptop-like experience, you know, available to you as part of your tablet. They released this debut video. There's a link in the show notes if you want to check it out. It's intense. It is. Oh.
Okay.
There's some.
Is there music?
Oh, there is some crazy dubstep going on in that debut video. I mean, it's like really driving the point home of this is technology. You know, it's very, yeah.
Sure is.
Yeah. But anyway, but so what's your overall impression on the Microsoft Surface here?
Don't know.
Okay.
It's a technology that I don't know a lot about, and it depends entirely on how it feels when you use it. And apparently there's a big problem with letting people actually use it.
Yeah. So this news came out as well. There are all these review sites that are writing these hands-on reviews of Microsoft Surface, and then this one guy...
There's not really some hands-on.
Yeah. So this guy was calling the other reviewers out and saying, hey, you know, I went to this event too, and
no one was allowed to actually touch them.
Yeah, and they just held them up in front of us, and we sort of looked at them.
And they were real dicks when people like tried to, because everyone, I guess, like in particular, everyone was like, "What's the resolution on the display?"
Yeah,
and so this one guy like was like begging people. It was Danny Sullivan, and he's like begging over and over and over again, like, "Hey, can I please look at it? Can I please hold it? Can I please use it? Can I please, you know, can I? Like, you know, tugging on people's pant legs." And when someone finally like let him touch one, he did like the double tap on the desktop to go to look at the desktop properties to see what the resolution on the screen was. And the Microsoft guy was like, yeah, nice trick, and took it away. Because, you know, he's a hacker for like, you know, touching the desktop.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so yeah, they've been very, very protective about the way this stuff is shown.
That's so stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it crashed during the stage demo. It crashed. I don't know if you've seen that video, but there's one where I think it's Steve Sinofsky is demoing it, and at some point he's like, and there's this great experience where you can do this, you know, you can do web browsing, just like, it's great. And he's like talking about it. The thing is just not cooperating. And so he eventually just swaps it out for a you know, an off stage. He gets one off stage and then plugs
that
in.
Happens. So, that happens. You have to assume that it's going to fail.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, so kind of an unknown quantity at this point, you're saying, and
I'm saying it's
hands-on.
Yes, because something like this you really have to use, and it's like the thing that's great about the iPad in particular is that it begs to be touched, and you can interact with it very easily, and it's easy to use. And no, I don't know that Surface does that. Like, you know.
Yeah.
They don't let anyone try it.
You've been using Windows 8, so you know how that stuff works, but I guess not necessarily with that form factor and with the touchscreen and all that stuff.
Yeah, there's... Yeah. You all right there? Need a drink?
What's that?
What was that? You were like...
I don't know. Yeah, let me chug some water here. Hold on.
I think you should. Yeah, because I've been like, you know, they stepped up to the 1.5 liter size of Diet Mountain Dew bottles at my local grocery store.
Oh yeah, that could be dangerous.
I think that's
close to a lethal dosage.
Oh no, I drink more than that a day.
Okay. All right. Well, that doesn't mean it's not a lethal dosage. I don't know what.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I want to like this. I am not usually first on the bus to go to Microsoft Land, but I got to tell you, like, I really am optimistic for them. I think Windows 8 is good, and there's a lot of people, especially like in my family, for example, that are not going to go out and buy a Mac, like ever, because of, you know, whatever, you know, they're prejudiced, but the Windows 8, like Windows 7, first of all, was the first version of Windows where I didn't actually like actively fear for their lives.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I'm not really exaggerating. I mean, obviously it's a little tongue in cheek, like they're not going to get hit, but you know, it's not like something's going to fall out of the sky and kill them.
Huge improvements. Yeah.
Yeah. Huge improvements to security in particular. So, Windows 7 was the first release of that operating system that was not shameful. And Windows 8 has a lot of really cool things about it. I mean, it definitely pushes that envelope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, push the envelope.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so then the other tablet news.
I don't know anything about any of this.
Yeah, because tablets are the thing. So, well, there's a bunch of Google news because Google had their big Google I.O. conference where they announced a bunch of stuff. And including the Chrome for iOS, I guess, which we mentioned earlier.
And they're going to have a new they're going to have a dedicated Google Plus app for the iPad soon too.
Oh, nice! Yeah,
It looks really cool.
I really like the Google Plus app for iPhone. It's
really good.
Yeah, it's really
so much better. I mean, I know you don't use Facebook, but like the Facebook mobile app, you should know is terabad.
So my one complaint is that it's not great about resuming where you were if you switch applications or come
back
to
it. All of the new Google apps suck at that though. Like the Google Search app and the Google Gmail app.
When you
first launch them, it like spins its wheels for a while, and I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but
tell me about these tablets.
The interface is super sleek. So okay, yeah. So there's the Nexus 7 tablet, which is a 7-inch 1280x800 display tablet available mid July. There's an 8-gigabyte version for $199. So basically, think Kindle Fire here.
I'm gonna go out on a limb. This is running Android.
It's of course running Android. So the interesting thing here is they're actually kind of a big part of the pitch here is that this
could be Chrome OS.
It could. A big part of the pitch here is that this thing is for games. Actually, they're saying this thing has an NVIDIA graphics chip in it.
It's a Tegra.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the CPU and the graphics card. They're saying this thing is actually going to be sold at GameStop.
Get out of here.
No. and available at GameStop in mid-July. So it's an interesting pitch because if you look at tablet use, I'd imagine a fair percentage of it is people playing games.
Well, it's entertainment.
Entertainment in general, but gaming is a significant part of that.
Yeah.
So I think it is interesting to see this not entirely pitched toward that market.
Do you think it's wise for them to like go directly after the Kindle Fire?
Oh, well, so yeah, that's interesting too, because the Kindle Fire has been wildly successful.
But it doesn't do games, right?
But it does, but not
they're not trying to go after Apple with this. They're going after Amazon.
It's got all of the, like you've got on the Kindle Fire, it's got all of these sort of curated entertainment experience, based around the Google Play stuff, where you've got your movie rentals and your music and all that stuff. Of course, in the Google ecosystem instead of the Amazon ecosystem, both of which have their pluses and minuses. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I guess... it's probably a better competitor to the Kindle Fire than the Nook is.
Wait, the what?
The Barnes & Noble Nook.
Oh, okay.
Or the Nook Touch Color or whatever it is.
That's like a Kindle?
It's, yeah. I don't
know. I'm being a dick. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I
Wait, so, like, I mean, do you think that the Google Play... Is that coming along?
I've enjoyed what I've seen of Google Music, other than it using Flash thing.
They have to get rid of that.
I bought
because Android doesn't have Flash now. Like the new releases of Android are no longer going to have it in Flash.
I'd say it's almost certain. I mean,
it's already been done. Like Adobe is not even making it anymore. They're like, we're out. Yeah.
I've bought one album on Google Play. I picked up The Legend of Johnny Cash for $4, which seemed like a decent deal, just to sort of see how that whole process worked. It all works through Google Wallet, which is pretty straightforward. And by the way, has the best credit card entering interface I've seen. It's super sleek. Yeah, it's awesome. So I know the music side. I've not tried any of the, obviously I'm not going to buy a bunch of Android apps. There's the Android apps. There's also the books, magazines, movies.
Have you seen that there's an app for OS X that lets you run Android software?
No.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Huh.
It's in my pinboard, dog.
That's super cool. Huh. I mean, yeah, I don't that's know if that's all that
I haven't, useful. I haven't looked at it yet. Well, it's good. Really... It's useful for developers.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's a cool idea, though. Yeah.
It's called BlueStacks. Okay. And what it is it lets you run Android apps on Windows. It's been out for a little while, and now they have one for OS X.
Wow.
It's kind of like, parallels or crossover for Android apps. But it only supports 17 apps, apparently.
Oh. Okay, well, never mind then.
But it's not, it doesn't have, like, you know, super broad support, but it's interesting. I don't know.
And then the other thing that came out this, or two other quick things here before we wrap up here from the Google stuff is they released a kind of like an Apple TV-like thing, right? Like an Apple TV Roku, a boxy box-like thing called the Nexus Q. So
what?
This is, yeah. So I know, weird, right? So this thing streams music and video to a television or to a sound system. It's actually got a built-in audio amplifier, so you can plug your speakers directly into this thing and you know, play your music that way. It's got no remote control. It uses an Android device, and I'd imagine they've got to come out with an iPhone app to control this thing, but I don't know if that's the case.
Is there any reason why you would buy this over an Apple TV?
It's got LED lights on the outside.
So no.
I don't know. I mean, it integrates into the Google ecosystem. So if that's your thing, you know.
Okay.
Yeah,
I gotcha.
Yeah. You know, if you've got an Android phone and your stuff is in Google Music and whatnot, this is probably pretty awesome because
it looks kind of cool. It's like a little globe.
Stuff right in. It looks super cool. I mean, you know, they've got this tagline on their page that's like, not a black box. And it's like, well, yeah, it's a black sphere. But, it's a really cool-looking black sphere.
It's like a textured matte finish on it. Looks pretty slick.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the same size as an Apple TV in terms of, like, it's a globe, so it's not like, you know, that
but
small.
But I think, you know, this is, it's a conversation piece. You know, it's like, and it's got all this social stuff, too. So, like, you know, the whole scenario of you're having a party and other people want to, like, suggest music or whatever.
Well, there's one thing Google knows how to do. It's television. So this is going to go really well for them, I'm sure.
Yeah. There's a good review of this in The Verge. And I believe that review starts out with, like, Eric Schmidt said that, you know, all televisions were going to have Google TV built in by this point. So, yeah. 6 months ago, former Google CEO Eric Schmidt predicted that Google TV would be embedded on the majority of new televisions by this summer.
Signed a big deal recently.
What's that?
I use Plex at home.
Oh, yeah.
So I jailbroke my Apple TV so that I could run the Plex app on that. But I have, like, the Plex media server at home on my Mac. And I love Plex on iOS. I can stream any media in the house anywhere I go.
So, all
of my music and TV and movies and stuff, like, that's on the NAS at my house, I can actually stream on my iPhone. And then even from there, then send it to a local Apple TV or whatever. But the Plex stuff has been really taken off too. I think it's going to be a really good year.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff going on in media.
Yeah, yeah. So this thing looks cool. There's check out this review. It's available soon for $299, which I think is a little expensive.
Does it do like 1080p? Like, what are the how it stacks up?
I don't know that the tech specs are. Well, they have to be because people have review units of this thing. So. Okay. Yeah, I have not looked into it enough to be able to tell you. So, and then one final closing thing here to mention is Google Now, which is kind of just something we're going to keep our eye on because it's not really available yet. They've just got an info page out about it. But the idea is, you know, you've got an appointment coming up. You're about to ride the subway. Your favorite sports team is playing. There's a traffic jam, whatever. Google knows that that's going to happen, or you have a flight coming up. Google knows that's going to happen, and Google Now is a way for them to push little cards to you, and those cards have relevant information about whatever is happening right now based on time and location.
I'm on board. I like it.
Yeah. It reminds me of If This Then That, actually, a little bit. Except instead of you making the rules, Google makes the rules and
it pulls it from, like, you know, they have your calendar and they have your emails and this is something where they're doing something to help you.
Yeah.
You know, like,
well, this is the kind of thing that if you need to justify the fact that you are, you know, in the Google ecosystem. Like, this is the kind of thing that kind of helps you justify that, because this is a very valuable.
It'll make you feel like less of a schmuck for handing all of this over to
them. Yeah, it's a very valuable way to let you directly benefit from your data. So, Yeah, I think it's a cool thing to keep an eye on. They've just got a bunch of like screenshots out right now. It's not actually in beta or anything, in public beta or anything yet. So something to watch out for. So anyway, and with that, that is the end of our Google I/O news and the end of this show as well. So with that, we will tell you that you can contact us at show@hellyeah.com. You can email us at show@hellyeah.com. You can visit us online. I'm messing this up. At show.hellyeah.com.
Emery. Or on the Twitter machine, twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Send us a tweet @hellyeahshow.
All right. I will probably not have internet next week, but we will try to get you a show as soon as possible. So we will see.
Maybe
you
we'll
then.
Call in. We'll dial you in.
Yes, yes, indeed. all right. We will see you again soon.